Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I am your host, Herschel Finman. We have a great show for you today. We have, in this half hour of the show, we've had her on before, Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's is going to talk about the Judaica auction coming up at Sotheby's on December the 15th. And we're going to talk about what makes Judaica worth paying all that money for. We have a wonderful assortment of music. We are in the month of Hanukkah, so we actually have a Hanukkah song planned. You'll stay for that one. Not your standard, I have a little dreidel. No. The portion of the week is Vayetze, which can be found in Genesis chapter 28. Good Bible story stuff. And a really cool story at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. President Obama signed a waiver to prevent moving the American embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Congress passed a law in 1995 mandating the move of the embassy to Jerusalem, but allowed the president to exercise a waiver citing the national security interests of the United States. Every president since 1995 has signed such a waiver every 6 months. Dozens of firefighters from across the U.S. helped fight the wildfires that swept Israel over the last week. Hundreds of fires flared up in Israel, forcing tens of thousands of people to flee their homes. 32,000 acres of forest burnt along with hundreds of homes and businesses. Israeli authorities say that arson is suspect. Firefighters were aided by heavy rains, which began this week in Israel. So much so, flash flood warnings were issued across the country. 100 anti-Semitic incidents occurred in the 10 days following the presidential election. About 12% of the 867 hate incidents reported during that time were against Jews. France returned a 16th century painting to the grandchildren of a German Jewish couple who were forced to sell the work in Paris as they fled the Nazis. The portrait, attributed to the Dutch artist Jus van Cleef, was returned to Christopher Bromberg and Henrietta Schubert in a Paris ceremony. Their grandparents, Henry and Hertha Bromberg, sold the painting in 1938 as they were headed to the U.S. And finally, planning a trip to Israel? Well, Knesset is a nice place to visit, but the Israeli Knesset issued a new dress code, banning visitors and employees from wearing miniskirts and short dresses. And other articles of in clothing considered inappropriate would include tank tops, cropped tops, shorts, three-quarter length pants, ripped pants, shirts, and shirts with political slogans, flip-flops, and open-back sandals, which I suppose would mean that you could wear a closed-back sandal then. Well, it is Israel after all. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music, and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. 358-9000 and visit them on the web at spexhoward.edu. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Sotheby's own Sharon Mintz. We're going to be discussing upcoming auction of fine Judaica at Sotheby's. That's on December the 15th for those who are paying attention at home. How are you today, Sharon?
I am very fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
It's always a pleasure. We had you on. This is not the first. It's not, probably not going to be the last time you've graced our airwaves here.
So, I certainly hope so. It's wonderful.
Yes, it always is. So the auction is featuring lots and lots and lots of things. The press release said specifically that it featured the collection of a certain specific individual. If you could tell us about whom, well, personally I never heard of, but that doesn't mean anything. Who is this, what's the significance of this Judaica collection coming from this specific individual?
Certainly. The collection comes from an eminent collector by the name of Shlomo Musayev. Shlomo Musayev was a fascinating individual. He was the grandson of the individual who founded the Bukharan Quarter in Jerusalem in the early 20th century. And he has lived in many parts of the world and collected assiduously as his collection developed. He had homes in London, in Herzliya, and was an incredibly intelligent individual with a wide-ranging breadth of knowledge. He collected antiquities, he collected objects of silver, he collected books and manuscripts, particularly interested in beautiful works of art, and Kabbalistic manuscripts as part of our collection. We're selling one of the largest groups of Kabbalistic manuscripts ever to come to auction.
Okay, so like I say, the name Shlomo Musayev doesn't mean anything to me because I'm not in the collecting business, but if I were, say, like a collector of Judaica, would his name get me excited and say, oh yeah, I gotta go?
I certainly hope so, and definitely after this phone call, after this interview. Shlomo Musayev was also known because he and his wife were of the foremost jewelers in the world. They opened a jewelry store in London in the lobby of the Hilton Hotel, and he had celebrated clients from around the world. And there are certain stones, for example, jewels, that bear his name, such as the Musayev Blue Diamond. And now they have stores all over the world. So you would not only be excited upon hearing his name for Judaica, but if you were anywhere involved in the world of high fashion, high-end jewelry, you would certainly be familiar with his name.
That really explains why I haven't got a clue. But my wife would like me to, but...
There you go. You know, the stores are still open and active.
Okay, very good. Now, some of the things that intrigued me were books of practical Kabbalah. Have you actually taken a look at some of these things?
I have. We've cataloged them. And as you know, in the time before antibiotics, in the time where people got sick and there were no easy cures, the population looked for all sorts of remedies in able to fix things. And, you know, without access to necessarily the more recent scientific controls that we have, they often invoked prayer and God's name and Kabbalistic practices. And some of them are as simple as, you know, remedies to cure a toothache, but others are, you know, looking for love and different, you know, sort of approaches to how one can make things happen in a period where many things were beyond the control of individuals.
Did you try any of these out to see if they worked?
No, we've been very busy cataloging the sale.
I'd be interested, yes.
But that's what practical Kabbalah means.
Yeah, I teach an introductory course to Kabbalah, and I tell people that, yes, if you learn Kabbalah, you can turn lead into gold, but by the time you're able to do that, you won't want to.
So, is that right?
Yes, because you'll be just like, what's gold after all? So, Yeah, this is. I'm just fascinated. I'm scrolling down through the website and the amount of stuff. What percent of this large collection of Judaica actually comes from Shlomo Mosayev?
I think it's about half. Let's see. It's a little more than half. We have, I believe, 177 lots belong to him out of a sale of 288.
So. Okay, that is quite a percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so one of the things which is being, in the press release was being mentioned as a standout, is the first Siddur prayer book printed in America. Now, before I ask you the question about this, I recall in a previous interview with you, Sharon Mintz, when I asked about old Jewish Judaica printed in America, you kind of said at that point, well, America just isn't that old to have, like, collectible Judaica. So tell me about then this first printed prayer book printed in America.
This is an extraordinary piece, and I do remember having said that. Usually when we think about earlier books that are collectibles, we're talking about books from the 15th and 16th centuries in Europe. In America, when we talk about the most important and early and rare pieces, it's objects from the colonial period. That's the fledgling Jewish community that was here. They numbered in the hundreds. You know, it wasn't a large community. And to have in our sale the very first prayer book printed in 1761 for Jews in America is an extraordinary thing. There are only three copies, complete copies of this book in the world. And this is, you know, hasn't come to sale at ever, as far as I know. We have sold a later prayer book that's also exceedingly rare from 1766, but this here that you're looking at, the evening service of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is the very first book produced for the American market of Jews in the colonial period.
That's interesting. The Tarot Synagogue and the New York Synagogue, which names escape me, that was set up almost 100 years before that, did they import all their books?
They did. As a matter of fact, if you look to lot 219... you will see a book of the Chumash and Haftarot, the Pentateuch and Haftarot, that was printed in Amsterdam in 1726. And this was owned by Moses Mendez Seixas, who was a very important personality in this colonial community of Jews. And he signs his name on this Pentateuch, which he owned, which was imported from Amsterdam. And he was important because he's the first person to have penned the words "to bigotry, no sanction," which were then later used by President George Washington to refer back to the Jewish community and how America was going to be hospitable
mm-hmm.
to the community.
He was the rabbi at the time, yes.
He was not the rabbi.
He was
a member of the community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
There actually were no rabbis in America at that period.
So this is a six-volume Pentateuch. So it's like it was divided, the five books of Moses plus the Haftorahs, the
exactly
prophets,
correct,
which are read. And
yes,
it looks like it's in really good condition from the photo.
It's in lovely condition. It has an original binding. And if you look at the title page, you'll see he signed his name on the bottom. So this is an example where the Jews of America were, in fact, importing their books from Amsterdam and from other places for use in the synagogue and for personal use.
Mm-hmm. I'm just fascinated by looking at all the stuff on the website. I feel like a kid in a candy store.
So, us too.
Tell me about the Megillat Hitler. I have never heard of such a thing. It's from Morocco. And the Jewish community, I don't think, was really as muchly adversely affected in North Africa as it was in Europe, per se, Sharon Mintz.
Well, actually, they were. Let me take that back. They were certainly not as adversely affected as the Jewish community in Europe. There's no question about that. However, there was a custom, which you may be familiar with, of creating personal Purims, which means that when you experience some kind of miracle or God has saved you in some way, either as an individual or as a community, the correct thing to do is to celebrate and commemorate that. And the Jews of Morocco experienced that because, in fact, there were Nazi forces there, and Jews were interned. And, of course, the community did not nearly experience the same kind of horrors as was found in Europe, but it was not an easy situation. And as a result, when the Nazis were actually taken out of Casablanca, the Jewish community celebrated that and created a parallel story of the liberation from the occupation at the time, and turned it into an Esther story. Turned it into a scroll format in commemoration of the same way that the Jews were liberated thousands of years ago, in Persia from Haman. So that's what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not the only example of a personal or a communal Purim. Several years ago, we had the same kind of scroll. It's known as the Scroll of Saragossa, when the Saragossa community was saved. That was in the late medieval period.
You're answering my question, because I'm thinking if this was written in 1946, Jews, unfortunately, have been undergoing Holocausts for like more than 1,000 years of European history. Have you come across things that would be considered like real finds, something from 800 years ago or so?
In the way of Purim celebration?
Yeah, that type of thing, yes.
So, yeah, there is. There was the Saragossa. I believe that dates back to the 15th century, that mm-hmm. commemoration.
That's awesome. One of the things I'm looking at the press release that's being highlighted in this month's auction. Again, if you're tuning in, we are with Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's. She is an expert on Judaic books, old Judaic books. And Sotheby's is having an auction of said Judaica, not just books, paintings, Judaica, silver, brass,
silver,
copper, etc., all kinds of objects, not just art, but ritual objects. I'm looking at, for example, there's a menorah that's about 250 years old. If I wanted to, could I use that on Hanukkah? Or is it like, no, don't do that?
You know, if the menorah is well made, there's no reason not to use it. Objects of metal have lasted for hundreds of years. And, you know, the wax will wipe off with warm water. The oil can certainly be wiped off. As with everything else, it's a judgment call of how sturdy the piece is. But, no, we have people who buy beautiful old menorahs and take great pride in using them in their family celebrations. We encourage people.
Okay. Is it intentional that the Judaica auction is always held around Hanukkah time?
It is the time of our sale, but we do think about the fact that people might want to come in and purchase objects to give as gifts for Hanukkah. We're quite pleased that this year the auction is taking place before Hanukkah for just such a reason.
Mm-hmm. I can see, hey, honey, I got you for Hanukkah this $2.5 million painting.
That has happened, actually, quite a bit.
Okay, do you know about the Chagall, the Juft Mitara?
That's... I think Jennifer needs to speak about that. It's an incredibly beautiful piece, but it's not my area of expertise.
I was thinking, wow, this is like, it's an amazing, I've never saw this Chagall per se. I've seen a lot of Chagalls in different books and different things that he's done that have been on exhibition around
the world. It is absolutely dazzling. If we can get Jennifer on the phone for a minute, perhaps after you finish speaking with me, I think that your listeners would enjoy hearing a little bit
okay,
more about
it. Okay, we can do that. Okay, so tell us about the Baghdad Megillah, which is one of the highlights.
So this is an Esther scroll that was created in Baghdad in the middle of the 19th century. Esther scrolls began to be decorated in Italy in the 16th century, 1564 to be exact. In fact, we sold at Sotheby's about 8 years ago the earliest illustrated Esther scroll, which had been illustrated for a woman. I don't remember if we spoke that year. It was written by a woman, Estelina, and then illustrated, and that was the very first one. And the tradition continued for several centuries afterwards and continues up until today. We have in this sale many beautiful Esther scrolls, including one from Italy and Kona, which is one of the lots there together, and another one that was created by a well-known artist and scribe of Esther scrolls, Aryeh Leib ben Daniel of Gray. And this is a scribe, an artist, who began working in Poland and then makes his way down through Germany and ends up in Italy. Most of his Esther scrolls are done in Italy, but the one that we have on sale in this auction was one that he created in Schwelm on his way down between Poland and Italy. That's from 1737. And the lot immediately following that is the lot you refer to of the Esther scroll from Baghdad, which is in a beautiful octagonal silver gilt case. And the art of decorated Esther scrolls moves out from Italy, where it originated in the 16th century, to Amsterdam and then to other parts of Europe. And eventually it reaches the Far East. So it doesn't really get to Baghdad until the 19th century. We don't have examples of decorated Esther scrolls in Baghdad until about the middle of the 19th century. And the scroll that you're referring to is a very richly decorated scroll that was one of the first created in Baghdad with illustration.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been involved with older Judaic-ish ornaments?
30 years now.
30 years. Okay, so 20
of those years at Sotheby's.
Okay. When looking at this year's lot, was there anything... So you've seen a lot of old Judaica. When looking at this year's lot, and it came across your desk or your examining table, was there anything that you just like went, wow?
That's such a good question. That happens a lot, but it's kind of like picking your favorite child. Because in the Musayev collection, we have a number of very, very beautiful illuminated and decorated ketubot marriage contracts, more than we've had, I think, in one sale in a long time. There's one that's lot 97 that was created in Livorno in 1698, and it's profusely decorated with the signs of the tribes and the four senses and the four seasons and the signs of the zodiac and an image of Jerusalem on top. And I hadn't seen one like that come to sale in ever. And then it went on from there to other very unusually interesting decorated ketubot. And I thought, my goodness, you know, if it was only for that, the sale would be interesting. But actually, you know, you keep turning the pages and it gets better and better. For example, there is in lot 107 is a decorated, this is unusual, perhaps something that your listeners have not seen, an amulet for the protection of pregnant women and newborn children that was done in Kurdistan in 1900.
Yeah, I noticed that one.
And, you know, it's something, these were very ephemeral documents. A woman gave birth. Again, this is in the pre-antibiotic age. A lot of things could go wrong, and very often, unfortunately, they did. So the Jews and other cultures wrote amulets in order to ensure the protection of the child and the mother. And these were very ephemeral documents that often didn't get saved. And to have an illustrated document to ward off, you know, sort of the evil demons and Lilith from the mother and child is something that one doesn't come across. It's just really unusual piece. There was something else that came up, which is lot 118. This might have been my wow find, which was an illuminated leaf from a 15th century codex of Maimonides.
And I was going to ask you about that specifically,
okay.
Yes. Because that's when I went, wow.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, you know, as one goes through the catalog, it's like, oh, I said that about this, and oh, I said that, but I really did say it, you know. One of the things that I said it most about was this illuminated manuscript. You know, Jewish manuscripts over the ages suffered from all kinds of vagaries. You know, they were moved when Jews were forced to migrate. They were burned when Jews were forced to give up their manuscripts to the church for destruction. They were destroyed when Jewish communities were destroyed. And we've lost a lot over the years. And we know that Jews, as the people of the book, collected these manuscripts and kept them as best as they could. And sometimes we only have a few remaining leaves left of any manuscript. And when I first saw this, I thought, wow, I've never seen an illuminated a manuscript from Spain from the 15th century of Maimonides' philosophical work, the Moren Vulchim, one of his great masterpieces. Mm-hmm. And here it is. We don't know where the other part of this manuscript is, if it's lost in the library somewhere and will someday be uncovered. To the best of our knowledge and research, you know, the rest of this book no longer exists. But here we have this remnant of Jewish life in Spain from the 15th century, of which no other decorated example exists from that period.
Mm-hmm. You just answered pretty much every question I was going to ask you about that that specific piece. Like, why would anybody just want like a piece of a one page of a book and pay that kind of money for it too? It's, you know, so
I actually thought it was quite reasonable at $6,000 to $8,000. You know, illuminated manuscripts, if you had the whole thing here, there'd be another two zeros after that
easily.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking of the poor guy in some library someplace in the world who's like going through this Mari Novooking and saying, oh man, it's missing a page.
I think it's unlikely. We did a lot of checking. There are databases of Hebrew manuscripts, and if I could have pointed to where the actual remaining manuscript is, I certainly would have noted that, and we would have tried to reunite it, actually, with its others, you know, perhaps by offering that library a chance to buy it back.
Okay,
we did a lot of research, and I do not believe that this manuscript is extant, the rest of it.
Wonderful. Our guest today, again, is Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's. They're having an auction on December 15th. Now, this is the modern era, and people don't have to go to New York to participate in the auction if they are not in New York on December 15th. Oh, but before I ask about that question, is there like a viewing time I could kind of like walk in and say, I want to go look at these things?
Absolutely. We encourage all of your listeners to come on by. We are open for viewing Sunday, December 11th to Wednesday, December 14th. And we very much enjoy having people come in and look at the material and handle it. These objects are absolutely electrifying. Being able to pick up a book from the 14th century, or things that were penned by the great Rabbi Chaim Vital, or an object, a cup, a menorah that was used 300 years ago, is a very special treat. And everybody is welcome to come and visit Sotheby's if they're in New York. If they're not in New York, they can visit our website, because we have all of this information and many high-resolution images, which they can zoom in on our website currently. The entire catalog is on our website. With essays about the Kabbalah and the menorahs, the Hanukkah lamps in the collection. And, of course, you can participate in the auction. You don't have to be in New York. You can call in. You can be online and watch it streaming and participate digitally. And, of course, you can be in New York as well.
Mm-hmm. Can I, like, submit a bid now online, for example?
I'd have to put you to our bid department, but yes, you could.
Okay, so I don't even like December 15th. Oh, I'm so busy that day. You know, I'm just going to bid.
You can put your bid in advance. People shouldn't wait till the last day. Absolutely not.
Oh, that is that is so awesome. Okay, our guest has been Sharon Mintz, and from Sotheby's. The website is, I'm just assuming, sotheby's.com. And then it will take you through to that. And you can scroll down. December 15th is the auction. Sotheby's does a lot of auctions. In fact, even on December 15th, this is not the only auction. So as far as Sotheby's, with all of its branches around the world, how much emphasis do they place on this one auction?
Well, this is our very special sale, and we usually do one Judaica sale a year, so we give it our all. We have viewings, we send out catalogs to clients around the world, we field phone calls. Sotheby's devotes its staff, its time, and its talents to making sure that this is the absolute best Judaica auction in the world every year, and in fact it is.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we hope that the sale goes well and that we have the ability to talk about this again next year, Sharon Mintz.
That would be wonderful. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
It's always a pleasure. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Schultzman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for some music now. This is brand new. The artist is called, his artist is named Micha Gamerman. He's actually, that's in his Russian name, Micha Gamerman, but he's an Israeli. And the song that he is singing is a title piece from his latest CD called Al Naharis Bavel, which means on the bank of the river Babylon.
ישבנו בזוכרנו את ציון על נהרות בבל שם ישבנו גם בכינו בזוכרנו את ציון אם לא
of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com. That's MI for Michigan, KO for kosher, and SUP for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan Cake products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herr Schulfenman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Just a reminder, if you are listening on WLQV 1500 AM, you can now switch to WLQV 92.7 FM and listen to this wonderful music in stereo. We have up, speaking of music, this is Moshe Baron, and he is a German klezmerist, and we're going to listen to a piece that he is doing called Kala Bazetzen, which means sitting with the bride.
Or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Schulfenman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This month is Hanukkah,
And there are traditional Hanukkah foods, depending upon the region of your ancestors. Most American Jews, being descendants of European Jews, make on Hanukkah latkes, which are very just simply potato pancakes. The reason why these foods, which are deemed to be Hanukkah-worthy, in Israel they eat donuts, descendants of Iraqi Jews eat borekas, there are other things which are consumed. So it's because of the use of oil, commemorating the miracle that happened with the oil. So if you want to know how to make latkes, here's the Maccabees doing the latke recipe.
Tonight is Hanukkah, got everything we need, a frying pan, some oil, and a latke recipe. Let's celebrate our ancestry. We've got, the latke recipe.
Da-da, 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 da-da.
Stomp potatoes, peel and grate, shredding onion, tears streaming down your face.
Hospital, get healthy. At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Vayetze. It is found in the book of Genesis, chapter 28 and following. It describes Jacob going and getting married and the birth of all of his kids. The portion starts that Jacob left Beersheba and he went to Haran, which is, this directional thing is really pretty superfluous because we know that Jacob was living in Beersheba. We know that because that's where Isaac was living. That's where the whole story was last week with him, with Jacob and Esau getting born and Jacob stealing the birthright and Jacob or buying the birthright and Jacob stealing the blessing. That's all happening in Beersheba. So we know that he's in Beersheba. So what's the deal here that it talks about that he is in Beersheba? In last week's portion, there's this whole thing that goes on with Jacob getting the blessings. And he tells his mom, Rivka, you know, my brother's really different complexion than me. My father, okay, he can't see me because he's blind, but all he's got to do is feel, and he'll see, oh, you're not Esav at all. You're Jacob, and I'm going to curse you. So she says, I got it covered. We're going to put some goat skin on your hands and around your chin. You'll feel just like Esav. The father does not believe that this person who he hears, which is the only way for many years that he's been able to tell who's who, is by the sound of their voice. This person has the voice of Jacob. And he says, no, you're not Esav, you're Jacob. Let me put my hand on your hands. So he feels his hands and says, wow, this is incredible. The voice is the voice of Jacob, and the hands are the hands of Esav. What's being alluded to over here, that why Isaac did not want to give the blessing to Jacob, is because he said, Jacob's fine. He sits in a tent. He doesn't bother anybody. He's the good one. He doesn't need any additional help. And me giving him this blessing, well, it's just, you know, it's superfluous. It's like, what's he going to do with it anyway? Now, Esav, on the other hand, he's out in the world. He's doing. And if I give him this blessing, he's going to take all this divine energy, and he's going to do really good things. So now that he feels that this person has the hands of Esav, he says, oh, the best of both. He's righteous like Esav, like Jacob, and can therefore connect to God in such a way that Jacob was able to connect. But his hands, he's willing to go out into the world and do and accomplish. Great, we're going to give him the blessing. And indeed, when Esav comes in and says, okay, I'm ready for my blessing, Isaac says, well, the guy I blessed actually got the blessing. He's blessed. You're not. Sorry. Now, given this idea that Jacob is now going into the world, what is he going into the world for? It's what we're all created for. He's going into the world to make the world a better place. And he's going to do that the best way possible. He's not going to be sitting in his tent hovering over his books anymore. That's done. He's done that already. Actually, Rashi does comment that as soon as he left, he went and spent 14 more years hovering over books. But no, eventually he does get to where he's got to go. The idea of leaving Beersheba. What was Beersheba? Why was Beersheba called Beersheba? Is because Jacob's grandfather Abraham and his father Isaac both made pacts with treaties with Avimelech, the king of Gerar, in Beersheba. Meaning Avimelech, who was a Plishtim, a Philistine, who is basically the embodiment of everything antithetical to Judaism. They made a treaty with him, a pact of non-aggression. We will live together. You'll live over there, we'll live over here. Jacob was like, what? Nuh-uh, I'm not doing that. I'm not sticking around here and living with the embodiment of evil. No way. I'm leaving Beersheba. Because my father and my grandfather, what were they into? They were into just like controlling, getting along with evil. Me, I'm going to Haran, which Haran is referred to as Af Shel Olam, the anger of the world. If you were to pull the plug on the world and all the water would go down the drain, it would go through Haran. It's the very bottommost. It's the pits. And he said, that's where I'm going to be successful. And I'm not going to deal with evil on evil's term. I'm not going to deal with anything which is antithetical to my beliefs. I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to conquer it. And we see that what's the difference? Abraham, okay, I'm willing to live with it, had Ishmael. Isaac, I'm willing to live with it, had Esav. Jacob, I'm not willing to live with it. 12 righteous sons that became the 12 tribes. So now, us, here in 2016, we're out in the world. We're out in the world to not get sunk into the world, not to be overcome by the quagmire of the world and its mundane pleasures, which are only transient. We're here to conquer the world. We're here to utilize the world and making it a much godly place, much more godly place. Ultimately, and we're right there, we're right at the cusp, we're right at the edge. When the world gets to be the way the world is supposed to be, we usher in the Messianic era. Let's just hope that the Messiah, the Mashiach, comes before this next commercial break is over. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. You want to get in touch with me? Very, very easy. Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll find a way to contact me, of course, right on the homepage. You'll find archived editions of the show. Want to hear about the new English Yiddish dictionary? It's right up there right now, along with 50 or so other archived editions of the show. You could binge listen. Ooh, what a treat. There's also archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, different media in which yours truly convey insights into Judaism, which in a hopefully entertaining and educational way. There's also a classes page. We're getting done. We started Tanya in 2009, which is the basic tome of Jewish philosophy. And it is quite heady. We started in 2009. We're getting up to just about finished. We were thinking we'd be finished by Hanukkah. I don't think so. It's probably a little bit after Hanukkah. So it took us 7 years, once a week, to go through it. And those are all posted, and you can start from the beginning and just get into Tanya. It's like way super cool. That's what got me into Judaism. There's also the very important donations page. November? No, still haven't. The people here at WLQV, Salem Broadcasting, very patient people. I told them, you know, it's happened before. Sometimes we fall behind. We fell behind. We're not even close to covering November. So your donations will help November. And if we get November and December covered while it's still December, I don't talk about raising funds. But you're listening to The Jewish Hour. You like it. You want it to continue. It's been on for 20 years. It's the end of the year. Are your taxes in order? Have you given the necessary allotment to charity, the maximum that your tax deductions will allow? Think about it. Are you up with your 10%? That's the minimum of giving according to Judaism, tithing. So take a look. Go to your computer if you got QuickBooks or Peachtree, one of those, and see where it is. Make this little pie chart. It's really cool. And it comes up with a little number. And you can tell yourself. And you can see. And you can go to rabbifinman.com. Click on the donations page. Pick a number. Enter any number. It's all quick, safe, effective. It's PayPal. You can do it so that it does it once a month so that you can become a major giver over the course of a year. It doesn't have to all be all at once. It could be, that's fine. Space it out. And then that way you can do it and forget about it, and you're doing the mitzvah in your sleep. Wow, what a wonderful thing. Do it today, rabbifinman.com. Okay, the story involves a certain Rabbi Hilkin who lived in Jerusalem about 50 years ago or so. And this Rabbi Hilkin, he was approached by a person who was collecting money for a very sick person who needed an operation. The man told this Rabbi Hilkin that he needed 60 lira, which I'm not sure how that means now because the currency in Israel changed so often back then, which was evidently a very large sum of money. And he said, I'm tapped out. I've given my 10% for this year and next year already. So the guy left. He said, but wait a minute. The man needs an operation. Go to the Free Loan Society These are every Jewish community has a place where loans can be given at interest free, and have to be paid back, of course, because it's a loan. And I figured it out that I spend a half a shilling. There was on that type of currency at that time. I spend a half a shilling on wine for Shabbos, so I don't need to inaugurate the Shabbos on wine, which is customary with a cup of wine. It could also be done on bread. So I'll cut out drinking wine, and you go borrow 20 lira, which is a third of it, quite a number, and I will pay it back, guaranteed, a half a shilling a week. And that's what it did. That's what he did. And it took 16 years for him to pay back that loan. But, as he said, somebody needed an operation. Somebody needed your help. He was able to do it. And it fits into the guise where it says that if you have one canteen of water and it's either your life or somebody else's, you don't have to share. But if you've got wine and meat and someone else doesn't have bread, get rid of your wine so that person can have bread. That's going to do it. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.